Hello and welcome to another episode of Chillin' in the State House, your favorite second place Kansas Press Association award winning podcast.
We were robbed.
I'm Jason Alatid of the Topeka Capital Journal. That was John Hanna of the Associated Press. And we also have Jack Harville here of the Topeka Capital Journal. We are here the Monday before veto session. We are still waiting on some potential bill signings and vetoes from the governor. She has until Thursday to act on them. And Thursday is the start of veto session.
Right.
We might be here. Did I say it was Monday? I'm sorry. It's Tuesday. But it feels like a Monday because we might all be here on Saturday.
Yes, indeed. There is a possibility of the legislature working on a Saturday.
Because they've given themselves a deadline of next Tuesday, April 30th, of having all their work done. That doesn't mean that they'll actually have their work done on April 30th. They might go into the morning of May 1st.
Indeed. Should we introduce ourselves?
I already did.
Did I miss that?
Yes, but you can reintroduce yourself.
Well, I'm John Hanna with the Associated Press, and Jack.
And I think Jason did such a good job that I think we'll leave it at that for me.
Okay.
And you know,
I'm getting old. I'm forgetting things. My short-term memory is going.
Well, John, you and I had to introduce ourselves at the mic last week. Friday, we got new consensus revenue estimates, which matter for veto session, first
yes.
for formulating the omnibus budget,
yes.
and then second for deciding what to do about tax cuts.
Right.
And it's a little bit of a unique style press conference where they live stream it on YouTube.
Yes.
And reporters have to go up to the mic and get on the YouTube live stream.
And announce who we are. Because, of course, while everyone in the room knows who we are, the viewers out there may not.
And they might not hear our questions if we don't.
That's true.
But it was just you and I asking questions.
Yes, it was.
It was a fun time.
Yes, what we should note is that the forecast really didn't change that much. It reeks of stability in terms of one estimate. The estimate it replaces to the projections now, I think they took about $100-something million off the fiscal 24 total revenue tax collections, but basically added the revenue back in fiscal year 25 when you look at tax collections and interest earnings and that sort of thing.
In keeping with the stability as the theme or the story out of the revenue estimates. For the past several months, we the state of Kansas, have had declining state revenues, or at least revenues that didn't meet the estimates.
Yeah, that's the better way to put it.
And that was reflected in that drop on the current fiscal year.
Yeah.
But they didn't project that below estimate revenue to continue into the
right.
future. They expect it to stay stable, and the reason for adding more money next year is because of the delay in getting the Integra mega project up and running,
yeah.
which has delayed a tax cut related to that.
Yes.
So the state economy isn't expected to do substantially better, bringing in substantially more tax revenue, and it's not expected to do substantially worse. Which means that the governor still has a decision to make on the tax cut plan, and her budget director said that they had only had the revenue estimates for about 30 minutes at that point, so they hadn't discussed
yes.
with the governor yet what to do. But John, that's a pretty sizable tax cut.
It is. It's about $1.5 billion over 3 years. I think it's about $250 million more than the governor thinks is affordable. Of course, Republicans and some Democrats, particularly in the House, think it's affordable. And whatever she does, it will shape the budget. And if she vetoes it, that's going to suddenly become the number one issue for Republican leaders is when and whether they try to override that veto. They will certainly want to. The question is, when do they do it in that six-day period?
And one thing to note is these revenue estimates only project out 2 fiscal years, right?
Right, through the end of fiscal year 25 in June 2020, at the end of June 2025.
And the governor in her past comments has said that she's looking out to fiscal year 2029 on the cost of tax cuts. Legislators and the governor largely agree that it's not so much the immediate cost of the tax cuts, it's the long-term cost of the tax cuts, and they disagree over how much is affordable. The governor has said $425 million a year by fiscal year 29 is really the cap she would want to see, and Republicans, at least House Republicans, have said that $500 million a year is affordable. And this plan is what, $469 million?
Something like that, but you also have to remember it doesn't have the child care tax credit provisions in it.
Which is in a bundle on child care overhaul, yes. And I think that's $18 million a year.
Yeah.
And then there's at least 2, maybe 3 other bills related to tax cuts that the governor either has acted on or could act on.
Yes.
One of those, thinking of veto session, she vetoed this past Friday. That's the tax credits for donations to anti-abortion counseling centers, also known as pregnancy resource centers.
Pregnancy help centers, they're now calling them. Basically, centers that are very, very loosely part of the anti-abortion movement in the sense that they are providing services so that people don't get abortions. We could have a 3-hour program on the work they do and why the abortion rights side objects to them and objects to them being funded. But generally, among the things they do are they provide supplies and counseling services and other things to prospective parents and new parents. And this would be a 70% tax credit, if I'm remembering right, Jack?
Yeah, I think it would have a 70% reimbursement rate. So if you give $100, you could get a $70 tax cut. And it's capped to,
I think it's $10 million a year total. Yeah. And no one donor can get more than $5 million in credits, I think. And so the idea is to goose their fundraising to help them bulk up their services and help more people. And then, of course, there's a sales tax exemption for the centers themselves, so they wouldn't have to pay the sales tax on the items that they buy as part of their operations. And, you know, for example, that's something the state does for churches.
We talked last week about 2 other anti-abortion-related vetoes, but there's a 4th one now that we would expect to come this week, and that would be a line item veto in the budget.
$2 million in direct aid to those centers. We should note that the legislature, that they did this last year. She vetoed it last year. The legislature overrode that veto last year. So there's it's a near certainty that they'd override it again this year, depending if how many people can be present, basically, in the House especially.
And so we'll be watching to see what line item vetoes in the budget the governor has. One that isn't really going to be an issue anymore is the defunding universities a little bit over DEI, because that was tied to a separate bill where if that bill went into law, then the budget DEI provisions would not go into effect. And John, you wrote about that DEI bill.
Yes, and it will take effect because on July 1st, because the governor let it become law without her signature. It bars state universities, community colleges, technical colleges from requiring applicants for admission, jobs, and promotion to make a statement as part of the application process about their views on diversity, equity, and inclusion. What's interesting is it comes, her action to let it become law without her signature, that was Friday, 2 days before the Board of Regents adopted a similar policy, but for just the 6 state universities. In addition, the Regents policy doesn't specify penalties, whereas this new law does. If a university violates it and eventually they can be sued by the attorney general and they can get a fine of up to $10,000 per violation. What's interesting is the governor said she didn't think this kind of conduct goes on. This isn't a part of what the universities are doing. Legislators would tell you otherwise based on what they've been hearing out in the countryside. But nevertheless, it is the law, so that kind of negates these budget provisions, and we will see how all of this plays out, what kind of effect it has.
It was something like $35 million that would be taken from the university budgets, and they would only get it back if they certified that
they would have to. I reread it, and I'm not sure they would have to actually appear in person, you know, in sackcloth and ashes and all that, crawling on their knees. But the top administrators would have to certify to the Finance Council, the governor, and eight top legislative leaders that they weren't doing this. Based on the language, I'm assuming that could have been a report in writing. But
with how – I guess I'm curious how they defined DEI, because that's a pretty broad range
of practices. Well, they don't. That's the interesting thing. DEI is not defined, and that's one of the criticisms of this new law is they don't – you know, it's kind of a – it leads it to a I know it when I see it test. But the argument of supporters is that there are so many different definitions of DEI out there that it's kind of hard to pin it down. And what they've done is they've set up a test. If you have something on an application that says you've got to make a philosophical statement about DEI, or as the way the law is worded, any other ideology, well, then you're in violation. So that, the argument goes, is the test, and you don't have to worry about what the definition is. The legislators and others who are pushing this just do not want some kind of ideological test. Of course, they're banking on the idea that these being universities, that those tests will tend to skew toward the liberal / progressive side of things as opposed to the conservative side. And, you know, the argument being, you know, let's say you want to be a professor of engineering or geology or biology, it shouldn't matter what your views on DEI are. What should matter is how good a teacher you are and how much you know the subject matter. And it being universities, how much you're published as well.
Well, thinking of another diversity arena, Jack, you wrote about one of the three foreign-related bills. There's the one on capers and divestment that the governor let become law. And then legislators are still working on the foreign land ownership bill. Mm-hmm. And then there was a third one.
The drones?
On drones.
Drones, yes. And
I think the governor has a deadline this week.
Yeah, Thursday. Until Thursday.
So can you explain the keepers one to us?
I actually haven't finished that article. But here's what I understand of it so far. It would basically require the divestment of, I think, half of any funds in a country of concern, which is China, Venezuela, Cuba, Iran, North Korea. I think those are the five. It would basically force the state retirement fund to divest from any company with any ties to those countries within a year or within 2 years, all the way 50% by the first year. And I'm not sure if there are many investments in those countries. China would be the one that would make sense, but I didn't see any testimony about, you know, how much is actually invested whenever looking back at the committee hearings.
And I mean, House Republicans have really promoted those three bills as related areas to try to out of national security concerns. And it seems like the Capers pension one is the least controversial of them and had mm-hmm. the least amount of discussion. It's the foreign land ownership one that has really had I was going to say the oxygen sucked out of the room, but maybe the nitrogen sucked out of the ground is the better, the more agriculturally related one.
It's had the wheat threshed or something, whatever metaphor we want to use. Yeah, when they come back, there's likely to be another run at that. They had I can't remember the vote, but it was clear that it might get to 21 if everybody in the Senate was there, and that was the issue. And so there's probably going to be another run at that, but it didn't appear to have a veto-proof majority if the governor is inclined to veto it.
And the drone one is out of fear that Chinese-made drones have some kind of spy technology in there that lets China see what police see when they use these drones.
Yeah, and originally it would have required the replacement of those drones pretty quickly. But I think if I'm remembering the way the conference committee rewrote the bill, it's now basically as they age out and, you know, fall apart, then you're replacing them. You can't buy drones with critical parts made in China.
Mm-hmm. And thinking of law enforcement and police, we had what I think caught a lot of at least Republicans off guard. Yes. On Friday, the governor vetoed the bill on law enforcement dogs.
Yep, increasing the penalty for harming law enforcement dogs and horses.
Let's not forget the horses.
We can't forget the horses. And I don't know if there's any other law enforcement
animals. Millions of little girls who are My Little Pony fans don't want us to forget the horses.
And
Red Velvet, what is it? National Velvet. That's the novel, right? It was a movie starring Elizabeth Taylor back when she was a kid.
I know.
Oh man, I'm showing my age here.
I know back when I was in Wichita, they had a horse unit. I think they did some old town late night patrols, and they also did searching for at least one dead child when I was there.
Yeah.
But the governor laid out in her veto message that she had some issues. It wasn't as much a issue with the concept of the bill, but more with the technicalities of how lawmakers wrote it.
More with mandatory minimums, I think, as a principle. 'Cause, yeah, it would set, I think, I'm not sure if it's minimum or maximum of, I think it's a minimum of a year up to 4 years.
Yeah, and under certain circumstances, you could get 5, I think, if you were fleeing or something like that, and a fine of up to $10,000. And in her veto message, she questioned whether this would be punished more harshly than other offenses that were as serious or more serious. And, of course, the House Speaker Dan Hawkins, a Wichita Republican who championed this bill, was buying none of that.
He said in a statement that it was political pettiness.
A stunt, too. He called it a stunt.
And then he tweeted a meme, well, X, posted on X, a meme, Wizard of Oz theme, where Laura Kelly is the Wicked Witch of the West, and it says something like, "I'll get your little dog to law enforcement."
I'll get you law enforcement and your dogs, too, or something like that. It was, you know, you never, in Kansas, you never, you know, there's always reason to grab for the Oz reference. Anyway, yeah, that was an interesting little meme on Friday.
So it'll be interesting to see if legislators think that the governor was right when she said.
Well, what's interesting was the bill didn't have a 2/3 majority in the Senate. It had way more than a 2/3 majority in the House, but I think it was 2 votes short in the mm-hmm. Senate. So that suggests that some senators, some Republicans, were a little nervous about those penalties. We'll see. I mean, you know, nothing can unite Republicans like a Democratic governor vetoing a legislative leader's priority. But we'll see.
One that law enforcement want.
Yes.
And one with dogs. I'd say cute dogs, but I guess depends on if you think that Belgian Malinois and
German Shepherds
are cute.
I don't know. They are as puppies. I'm not so sure they're so cute if you're a suspect staring them down.
Cute until they're at a full sprint.
Yes. But, I mean, the argument is that these animals are important to law enforcement and their operations, that, of course, what inspired this was the death of a police dog in November, a dog named Bane, who was sent into a culvert.
Storm drain,
maybe, to go after a domestic violence suspect. And that suspect, the authorities say, strangled the dog. So that's what inspired this.
When it went through the House, I think there was one Wichita Democrat who said,
Ford
no,
car.
If a dog is coming after you, what are you going to do?
Yeah. This has been a debate, both increasing the penalties. That's been a debate across the country. But then also there have been debates about how these dogs are used, whether they're used disproportionately against people of color. Of course, you have those classic images of Southern sheriffs turning the dogs on civil rights protesters in the 60s. So there's a lot of stuff that gets caught up into this question of whether the penalty should be tougher than they are. I just note it, to me, it's the most interesting veto by a governor since 1991, when Governor Joan Finney, also a Democrat, vetoed a bill that would create a sheep commission. She did not like the way it was structured, by the way. She thought we should have a sheep council instead. But that was the last big animal-related veto that I remember.
Did anybody get in any, like, pulling the wool over the eyes or any bad veto jokes?
I'm sure they did. Yes, they did. I mean, I'm sure House members bawled when it passed. The House was a little rowdier. It may be hard to imagine this, but the House was a little rowdier back in those days. I mean, you know, white flags would go up if somebody talked too loud. If you had one of those deals where you had a vote and somebody would come down and explain, and then suddenly 10 or 15 or even 20 people switched, you get somebody would wave a rubber chicken around. People used to, you know, flip rubber bands at each other. They used to eat popcorn on the floor and it'd get all over the place. They kind of the renovation scotched all of that.
Sounds like It's So High School, which I think is a Taylor Swift song.
Yes, it was. Yes, it is actually on the new album, right?
I think that's the one about Travis Kelce.
Yes.
Which we can get in our obligatory Taylor Swift reference. Now
yes, the Tortured Poets Department. Boy, yes.
And
what an apt name. 2 hours of mostly her dissecting her past failed relationships.
John, I think you felt a little tortured listening to
it. Not so much tortured, but just kind of like I texted my daughter and I'm like, is she okay? Does she need a therapist? One review I said that Taylor Swift owns the mess that her life had been previously. My comment to you was, you know, I was impressed by the talent there, the singing, the musicianship, and some of the songwriting, although some critics saw it as getting a little too wordy, but I thought it was fine. But I don't know that I needed to spend 2 hours enmeshed in her past relationships.
Well, I'll say that it seems like Swifties
yes.
enjoy it. People who aren't Swifties, maybe not so much.
Well, the governor is kind of a Swiftie, right? She says she likes Taylor Swift.
Yeah, it seems like it. Or at least trying to get into it. Maybe kind of like you, John.
Yes. I mean, I doubt, to reference the meme, the Wicked Witch of the West was a Swiftie. I've stunned you at the thought. You're trying to figure it out.
I was thinking the Wicked Witch of the West went after the little dog, and Taylor Swift has cats.
There was a story, I think in the New York Times, maybe, that said there are now studies that show that if you have a cat by the age of 21, you're more likely to develop schizophrenia. I can't remember why, but if you live with a cat, I guess you can see that.
Yeah, and to find a way to make this state government related.
Francis the cat. Yeah, yes.
The governor is a cat person.
The governor is a cat person.
She also names the state poet laureate.
Yes.
She is a professor at Case State, and the Cap Journal has a story from the Kansas poet laureate about how Taylor Swift has, she has caused a increase in interest in poetry among young adults.
Yes. Yes. And actually the Associated Press had a story, when the album came out, about, poetry experts, literature people debating whether Taylor Swift is a poet. The argument being that if you write stuff that is like poetry, you're a poet. Bob Dylan got the Nobel Prize in Literature, for goodness sake.
Your poetry doesn't have to adhere to all these strict rules that you learn when writing sonnets in high school.
Well, I mean, Walt Whitman kind of blew that out of the water, right? Back in somewhere in the 1850s and the 1860s. I Sing the Body Electric, wasn't that his? Leaves of Grass, whichever edition you pick, because he kept revising it throughout his life.
And, you know, thinking of poetry and education.
Yes!
We are still waiting on an education budget, but related to education funding, Jack, you wrote about the new current year versus 2 year look back change.
Yeah, this has been a big problem for some districts. And currently, schools can either use last year's enrollment or the average of the last 2 years enrollment. This gave a little cushion for districts with declining populations, which you see in both the biggest school district in the state, Wichita, and in a lot of rural districts. But it's also left growing districts kind of in the cold. So if you gain, say, Jackson Heights, I wrote a story about Jackson Heights. They grew by about 25%, and they couldn't get any of that money for the first year that they had those students. So this current version, it kind of addresses both those things. You can use last year's enrollment or now it's you can use current year enrollment or the average from the last 2 years.
Well,
and that 2 year is only temporary, right? That like as a transition year as they go toward the current year the past year.
And for the uninitiated, the reason that's important is that the state sets they don't call it this anymore, but it's basically a base state aid, base budget per pupil, and it's multiplied by an enrollment figure now. It's not a headcount. It's an adjusted full-time equivalency, an FTE. And, for example, if a kid rides the bus, that's more than one student. If they're in ESL, that's more than one student, that sort of thing. So you have a headcount enrollment, and then you have another figure that is – it can be much higher. And the issue is your funding, your budget, how much you can spend, how much you can raise through the locally is all tied to that enrollment figure. So if you've got a declining enrollment, you know, and you don't have any cushion, suddenly your funding drops off, and it can happen somewhat dramatically. from year to year.
And John, you mentioning bus reminded me of my story just this past weekend.
Yes, on school buses.
School buses.
Passing school buses. Don't do it, people. When that red stop sign is out, stop. Because there are little kids getting on and off the bus.
Yeah, so we've been talking about bills that are becoming law and not becoming law because they're getting vetoed. And here we have a bill that's not becoming law because it didn't get a hearing and didn't advance out of committee. So the issue is that educators estimate that about 1,000 drivers are illegally passing stopped school buses every day in Kansas.
And that's a lot. That's like 3 per school district per day.
It's and
maybe more than that, like 3.5.
Having driven Topeka roads to work, I don't usually leave in time to get here before the school buses have already dropped off the kids for school. But on the occasions that I have definitely seen people illegally passing school buses here. But the idea in the legislation, which came about after a child was killed in Salina while getting on a school bus. Abilene. The bill would allow cameras to go on school buses that could then be used to issue civil penalties, because under current Kansas law, cameras cannot be used for a civil penalty.
Right. So if you passed one of these buses and thought, ha ha, I'm getting away with it, you could get a ticket in the mail saying you now own whatever the fine is for that. It's actually fairly hefty, isn't it?
I think the current law, it's $400. Wow. But under the bill, I think it would have been $250.
Still a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
I mean, you can buy a computer printer for $250.
And but the bill hasn't advanced. Representative Scott Hill, right, from the Abilene area.
Yes.
And a former state board member.
Yes.
He told the State Board of Education that it's House Speaker Dan Hawkins, who doesn't want the bill to advance, has concerns about the implications on privacy and the cameras and allowing penalties for cameras for violations captured on a camera.
Well, as somebody who's gotten nailed by the Illinois Turnpike Authority, and, you know, not only do you pay the $2 toll, but you pay like a $6, $5.50 or $6 penalty for every violation.
Kansas got me with that just last week. They don't even have a toll station for the road I was on whenever you're leaving. So I was a bit annoyed.
Which is a change that is going to be.
Yeah, they're going to tollless.
Yeah, starting in.
Plazaless.
Is it July 1st, I think?
Yeah, Kansas July 1st. Authority? You just drive and they'll just, you know. Yeah.
No stopping on the turnpike. You'll just get a bill in the mail.
So, yes. And I guess. The argument is, why should we add to the surveillance state that's already out there?
Well, Scott Hill's recommendation was that districts should just put on cameras anyway and shame people on Facebook, which and so if your concern is the privacy point of the videos, under the bill, those videos would not be public record. But currently, districts can put cameras up, and they would be public record.
I don't know what would be worse, a $400 fine or a Twitter mob coming or a Facebook mob coming after you. I'm thinking the latter might be the bigger incentive not to break the law.
But with lawmakers not taking up the bill to try to crack down on drivers illegally passing stopped school buses, the State Board of Education is working on a regulation to get school districts to try to draw safer routes.
Yes.
If possible.
People just should not pass school buses when the arm is out. Isn't that like the first question on the driving test for 16-year-olds, that you're not allowed to do that?
I don't know. Maybe the first question should be, which one's the accelerator and which one's the brake? And if you have it, which one's the clutch?
Yes.
Because growing up on a farm, I did once accidentally hit the accelerator instead of the brake.
Did you go through a wall?
I didn't go through a wall. I just left a little dent on the garage door.
Ah.
Fun times.
Fun times. Have we missed something? We didn't talk about the election stuff.
There were two election bill vetoes. One dealt with advance voting and kind of follows up on, was it 1 or 2 years ago when they had the so-called ballot harvesting bill, trying to limit how many advance ballots a single person can deliver for voters. Right, it mostly affects situations like nursing homes where the voters aren't going to take their ballot to
and they were going to they would like require that to be tracked by election officials, right? Am I remembering that proposal? What I remember about that bill, though, I think is that the bill that also had the thing where election officials, state and local officials, could not spend federal funds on election administration or promoting voting.
Yeah, I can't remember which bundle it went in, but that is.
And you know the unless there was specific legislative authorization to do it,
and specifically from Congress too.
Yes. So that got vetoed. The argument being that the Biden administration was flooding states with money to boost turnout in, say, Detroit, and to help Democrats, so they called it Biden bucks. It's kind of a follow-up to this discussion of what used to be called Zucker bucks, after Mark Zuckerberg of Meta fame. The idea being Republicans worried, and both of these things have been staples of these baseless conspiracy theories that have been out there for a while since 2020. But the idea being that, you know, this money would flood in and boost Democratic turnout. I mean, I think that's an interesting argument given ex-President Donald Trump's propensity, his skill at turning out low propensity voters, people who don't vote a lot, and the swing of working class white voters toward the Republican Party. So just kind of an interesting context there. But
and then we had the other election bill that was vetoed, the main piece of it being trying to address an election law that could be struck down by the Kansas Supreme Court and try to amend it to where Republicans think it wouldn't be struck down.
Or maybe that was where that
the federal funding piece was in one of those two bills.
One of those two bills, and I can't remember which one.
But this bill would amend the law on impersonating an election official, which civic advocacy groups like the League of Women Voters have feared that it could criminalize voter registration drives. So they have stopped voter registration drives and are suing the state. The Kansas Supreme Court has indicated in past arguments that it is more likely to rule with the civic advocacy groups. So Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach, Kansas Secretary of State Scott Schwab, went to lawmakers and asked them to amend the bill. They think it will address the constitutionality issue. The civic advocacy groups are not as convinced, and the governor vetoed it.
Yeah.
And it, while the vetoes are much more interesting to talk about, there were some signings of bills that became law, and there are two that I want to highlight. First, the Child Advocate Office, just because that it's been an issue since before I started this job, two legislative sessions ago. But that was an early a few months after I started the job was when Laura Kelly issued her executive order creating the current division of the Child Advocate. And at times it has felt like that has been a political football among politicians debating how to structure it and what powers to give it and who to have oversight over it. And it's been a couple years since that executive order, I think October 2021.
Yes.
And now we are in April 2024, and we lawmakers found a law. I found an agreement, and the governor signed it. And Jack, you wrote about that new Office of the Child Advocate law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is tasked with basically settling disputes, complaints made about these about DCF. The one thing that I'm kind of confused about on it is the highlighting that there won't be political reasons for the head official of that agency. I guess that could just be sorted out by Senate confirmation or something, but yeah, it's...
They really want the head of this agency to have expertise mm-hmm. in the world of child welfare and not be some political figurehead appointment. Mm. We don't always talk about the bipartisan bills that pass. Sometimes because some of the bipartisan bills that pass are not very substantial, but this is one that really seems like a substantial bill that was both bipartisan and bridged a divide among Republicans, because that was really what held it up, was Republicans didn't know how they wanted to proceed.
Yeah. Yeah. And boy, they wrestled with it for several years, right? I mean, since that 2021 action by the governor.
And the governor's 2021 action was after legislators had failed to find agreement before then.
Yeah. And, you know, just the issue was, for many Republicans, they didn't want it to be captive to the administration, because they figured that if it is, then that person will have a hard time criticizing the administration as directly when it's called upon, when it's called for.
And it sure seems like a big part of the reason for it getting done this year was Zoe Felix's death here in Topeka back in October. Even though the child advocate, as structured under the executive order, really couldn't have been involved at that time.
Sure.
But maybe in future situations that are similar, it could be involved. But it is really intended more so for children already within the foster care system.
Sure.
And then thinking of the bipartisan bills that aren't quite as substantive, but this one's at least fun to talk about. Jack, there's the distinctive license plates.
I'm surprised it took them this long to get a Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC one.
And don't forget about the Topeka Zoo.
Yes. You can now get a Topeka Zoo license plate.
I wonder what lobbyists could have gotten that put in there.
Tell us, Jason. Tell us.
I'm just going to guess that it's the one who happens to work or volunteer for the zoo.
Yes. Is that Fred Patton?
Yes.
The former state representative.
So if you remember back to November and the general public disgust with the new state license plate that is going to be rolled out.
How can we forget?
I think that new license plate is now, because they had to do the redesign, it's now going to be coming out later this summer.
Yes.
But if you don't want that and you want a specialty license plate, before you had like 55 to choose from, now you have like 60 to choose from. If you're willing to pay the extra fee, which varies, but
yes,
you can represent the Chiefs, the Topeka Zoo, the new Topeka flag license plate just got rolled out.
Can also do Sporting KC, I believe, the Royals.
The current?
I watched the current game this past Saturday, and they won like 5-1. It was quite the game.
You also can, older plates, you can proclaim your loyalty to your alma mater. You can get a K-State plate, Jason.
I could get a K-State plate, but I have the standard license plate.
Yes.
I'm surprised how some of those haven't been cycled out, though, because the threshold is pretty low. I think it's 125 orders over 2 years. So I do wonder how some of these plates are keeping up.
But just because it's bipartisan and fun doesn't mean that it is non-controversial. Because
yes.
there are a few legislators who will stand up every time these go through and say,
Representative Tory Blue gave the great make it stop. She said her only regret was that she didn't have a picture scribbled by her daughter for a design.
And
does she have a daughter? Her child.
I can't remember. But Representative Blue is a Republican from rural Western Kansas, right?
Great Bend, I thought.
Home of Roger Marshall.
Yes,
the U.S. Senator.
Yes.
And then on the Democrat side, I think the most forceful has been Representative John Carmichael, a Wichita Democrat.
Yes.
So, bipartisan support and bipartisan opposition.
Yes.
Maybe someday we'll have a chillin' in the state house license plate.
We should. We should. We need to up our merch game. Coffee cups and stickers.
Maybe we can learn something from Taylor Swift.
Yes, we can. We can make like six different kinds of coffee cups.
You can have the whole
a cardigan. Yes, we can have a cardigan. What else can we have, Jason? You're the more familiar with Taylor Swift's work than I am. I'm kind of new to the game. There are no more references.
I wish I could think of something
off the top of your head. Yes.
Maybe the coffee mug can say "All Too Well" on it.
Yes.
Maybe we can start pressing these podcasts into vinyl.
Yes. Yes. Like four different colors, five different colors.
We could use a few more expletives if we wanted to.
Yes.
And then I'd have to edit them out anyway.
Yes. Yes.
But
we could do the adult version and then the PG version.
And if you want to listen to more PG versions or adult versions, you decide which.
Yes.
Go back and listen to them.
Because we've got more than 100 now.
Yeah, go back and listen to our back episodes.
Do we call the first ones the first 25 or 30? Do we call those classics now? Chilling in the State House classics?
Maybe. I mean, you've been around for all of them, but that
well,
can be...
Well, not quite.
Well, most of them.
Most of them at this point. I'm kind of the permanent guest.
Yes. We can call that the Andrew and Titus era.
Yes.
Then there was the Andrew and Jason era, then the Jason and Jack era.
Yes. 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 And yes.
And
we have our own eras. We could go on tour, the Eras Tour.
Fun times.
Would we be sued for a trademark infringement if we did that? We probably would be. I can't imagine that Taylor Swift doesn't have like lawyers working for her who keep an eye out for this kind of
stuff. Well, I'm pretty sure once she started dating Travis Kelce that he started doing some more trademark filings. So he got some legal business advice from her.
Yes.
But don't use Chilling in the State House for your legal business advice. Just for your state.
We're not lawyers. We don't pretend to be lawyers. We just cover lawyers who write laws in the legislature.
And non-lawyers who write
and
laws.
Non-lawyers who help them.
Anyway. We're looking forward to veto session. Come back afterward for us to recap the tortured reporters department that will be veto session.
Yes, yes, yes.